Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's wokest tech podcast. Today, I'm going to be joined by editor at Tech Advisor, Jim Martin.
Hello.
Games editor at Tech Advisor, Lewis Painter.
Hello.
And senior staff writer at Tech Advisor, Dom Preston.
Hi.
It's the Tech Advisor full house. Today, we're going to be talking about the HomePod running rings around the competition. We're going to talk about Lewis and Kingdom Come Deliverance. And then we're going to talk about how woke Wakanda is. So join us. Jim, the HomePod.
HomePod time.
You've got your hands on it?
I have indeed, yes.
How is this latest piece of very expensive Apple kit?
It's actually very impressive. For a first generation product, I think it's very, very good. The hardware is polished. The sound is excellent. The only thing that really lets it down is that Siri sounds a bit robotic. And of course, it's hitting the headlines for making these rings on people's...
Are we going to talk about the rings first?
We may as well get it out of the way. I'm excited to talk about the rings. Let's talk about... You lead.
Well, it sounds... Yeah, so I've seen lots of headlines that the HomePod is leaving sort of white rings on wooden surfaces because, as Lewis just informed me, there's something in the silicon that reacts badly with certain wood surfaces, and then it leaves a sort of ring on your wooden table. So put your HomePod on a coaster. I've got a theory about this, actually. I think that they've done this on purpose, because you know Apple, you know, do everything on purpose. It's a design decision. And I think if it leaves a ring there, then you can't ever move the HomePod.
You're stuck with
so
it.
So that's
you
the
have
best
to buy
way.
A second one if you wanted one in
that
a
is,
different
that,
location.
That is the right. Apple lock-in, yeah. Is that it leaves a ring, so
it's
you can't ever move
an
it.
An extra, very subtle part of the walled garden that's yeah. been extended around your coffee table.
They're already walling you into iTunes, and now they're literally physically walling it into your table.
It's so incredible. Well, I'm not sure about that, but it certainly could open up a market for HomePod accessories, couldn't it?
It could. You could just leave it in the box, couldn't you?
You could.
I mean, that would 100% ruin the sound quality. Yeah.
Which I'm sure it will, especially as the tweeters are sitting right at the bottom. But so getting back to the actual device itself, it is very good. It certainly is worth the money from the sound quality point of view because good speakers are expensive.
And that's what they're selling it on, isn't it?
And it does what it sets out to do. Siri is... The voice is a little bit robotic, as I say, but the capabilities are, on the whole, in terms of a digital assistant, comparable with the Google Assistant and Alexa. But the advantage that Alexa has, and possibly Google, is that Amazon has gone out of its way to really help developers build those skills and get their kit integrated with Alexa. And it's very easy to build an Alexa skill.
It is.
I know that Apple has, of course, got SiriKit and is trying to tempt developers to bring their products so that it's got Siri integration as well. And I've certainly seen a few companies sending me emails about, oh, yes, our devices work with the HomePod now and the Tatmo cameras and a few others. But it certainly does not work with a smart home kit that doesn't support HomeKit.
I think the key difference there is... obviously, the quality of the voice assistants are probably comparable in terms of like their ability to learn and adapt to the users and things like that. But then where Amazon and Google have the advantage is the breadth of things that it can do.
Exactly, exactly. And one thing that Siri, of course, cannot do is it can't detect who's talking to it. So it will be effectively like Google Assistant and then an Alexa were at the start, which is that anyone could request anything and it will do what they ask. And of course, if you're going to say, "Give me some directions to work," it will only give know the work location of the person who's registered it. So it's kind of on. When you ask it certain things, it will only respond to its owner, if you like.
Yeah, or more troublingly, if you're linked with your bank account, how much money have I got in my bank account, and you've got someone around who you don't want to know.
Anyone can ask it to read out your text messages and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's the big one, isn't it?
Settings. Yeah.
Don't want that.
No, thanks.
So, yeah, I think that's a slightly minor issue if you're in a normal family home, because you would probably just not install that banking tie-in, if you just disable it. Whereas in a shared home, it doesn't. Yeah, it leads to more of a privacy problem. Yeah,
yeah. There's a few considerations there. You mentioned the hardware. I sort of got my hands on it a little bit the other day when it was in the office, and the thing that I notice is that it is built like a tank. It is so solid.
And of course it's beautiful. It's seamless. There's no there's no sign of them putting it together with screws.
No.
So it looks good and it sounds good.
Does it come in any other? I've only seen it in black.
It comes in white as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think white would probably be nicer, but yeah, that's an Apple thing, isn't it?
I get very dirty as well, though, wouldn't it? White fabric.
Yeah. The only thing, and this is something that obviously you would only find out when you've got your hands on it, is that the cover, the sort of fabric cover around it, is almost 3D, and the little diamond shapes, the little holes which are there so that the sound can get out without any colouring or anything. Little bits of dust and stuff sit in those, especially where they point up to the top. So you're gonna have to Hoover it probably.
It's first speaker we've had to Hoover. That's a new one.
You wouldn't be too worried about hoovering it though, would you? It's so solidly built. You just don't feel like anything's gonna come off or anything
the downside to that is that it's almost impossible to repair. Like you can't even get into it without actually damaging the HomePod itself. I saw iFixit's tear down, and they had to cut the mesh
to actually
get into it. Yeah,
it's classic Apple, though, isn't it?
No, I hadn't seen that. But the power cable is captive, which means that if that gets damaged, it's going to be tricky to repair. But then again, it could be something to do with audiophile tech, where they wouldn't want a connector in there potentially to do something to do with interference.
So I mentioned the price earlier, but we haven't actually said what the price is.
So the price, it's £319.
Yeah.
Which is, it's quite a lot.
It's three times-ish what an Echo is going to cost you.
Yes. Yeah. So an Echo...
It's cheaper now, isn't it?
The Echo 2 is £79.99.
Very good.
But the sound quality is probably three times worse.
Fair.
So if you're after, I know people who've just bought the Echo 2 and they're very happy with it.
Yeah.
And the sound quality is good enough for them. If you want really good sound quality with really good bass and all the special audio processing that the HomePod does, you know, separating out the instruments and giving you that really clear sound stage where you can hear everything, then you know, you may want to spend the extra money, but only if you live in the Apple world. Because if you don't have Apple devices, and if you've already bought loads of smart light bulbs that aren't HomeKit compatible, you can't control any of that stuff.
Yeah,
with
can't
the HomePod,
even set it up, can you? Without
you
an iPhone,
you need an iPhone or an iPad. And it's worth saying as well that the HomePod is your home hub as well, so that it gives you remote access to your HomeKit stuff from an iPhone without having to have an iPad at home or an Apple TV or something like that. So it could add extra value. If you were just at the start of your smart home revolution and you're just about to invest thousands of pounds in switches and plugs and lights and thermostats and stuff, then maybe you want to go that way.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, like, who is the target market here? It sounds like it's someone that is Apple through and through. They've been an iTunes subscriber for years. They're now Apple Music, you know, and they've got money to spend on what they want to be a high quality speaker. Are they? I'm guessing it's Sonos that should be more afraid than Amazon and Google.
It's interesting. There's 2 points there, actually. So first of all, yeah, we actually haven't mentioned that it's Apple Music that the HomePod uses. To, you know, all the audio sources really that integrate well with Siri are from Apple, of course. Yeah.
So you can't use Deezer, you can't use Spotify.
You can use them, but only if you AirPlay from your phone.
Sure.
So you can't.
You can't talk to it.
You can't really say to Siri, play a certain album from Spotify. Sure. You would have to start it from your phone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then you can use Siri to say,
so kind of
skip track, next track, previous track, or, you know, go forward. So you do need to be an Apple Music subscriber to get the most out of it, mm-hmm. for sure. It was interesting that Sonos did a deal pretty much when the HomePod launched, where you get two Sonos Ones for $299 or something like that. It was about the price of the HomePod. So I think our review of the Sonos One is very good. And if you have other Sonos products, then it makes a lot of sense to buy a couple of those. Apple has already announced that it's going to bring out a couple of extra features later this year for the HomePod, one of which is the ability to use two in a stereo pair. So if you've got a serious amount of money, you can have seriously good stereo quality. Hopefully that will work with the Apple TV as well. I don't think Sonos will be particularly worried, because they've got Alexa integration.
Yeah, I was going to say, they tied up with Amazon, didn't they?
Yeah. And
I think that's where the market's going to go now, because what we're seeing a lot more of is the big audio companies partnering with either Amazon or Google to put their assistants in.
That's right.
And that's really where Apple's competition is now. You don't compare the HomePod to an Echo. They're totally different products.
Exactly.
You do compare to the HomePod to a Sonos One, which is a lot cheaper and has Alexa in, which is arguably better than Siri, or at least more open and has like more breadth, as we said earlier. And we're going to see more and more of that, I think, higher and higher end speakers from the big audio companies that are the brands people really trust for audio in a way. You might not trust Apple for audio, you might not. But when it's, you know, a big audio company, you know, make amazing speakers and it's got Alexa built in, that's where you start to look at that over a HomePod and think, oh,
and
maybe
if B&W was to release something very high end for the UK with Alexa or the Google Assistant in it, that would be very interesting and certainly a real, possibly a worry for Apple in the UK. But hopefully they can get more support for different bits of hardware and different services, so that they're not so far behind Alexa, if you like, in terms of compatibility.
Yeah, cool. All right, I'm going to go around the table for your verdicts. Is it HomePod or you cheeky sod, Lewis?
I'm going to say you cheeky sod. I'm not a fan.
I'm going to say HomePod.
You cheeky sod.
Yeah, you cheeky sod. Can't use Spotify.
Yeah.
Going to have a little audio fill and then we're going to talk to Lewis.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Lewis, Kingdom Come Deliverance. Oh, never heard of it.
Great start. So, Kingdom Come Deliverance came out this week. It's a game that started life on Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a Kickstarter-funded game, which is always very exciting because they tend to promise so much and deliver so little. They're so disappointing.
That's everything on Kickstarter.
But it seems that Kingdom Come Deliverance has just about delivered on what they promised. I mean, the state of the game at the moment, it's a little bit buggy. I haven't really experienced a lot of the bugs, but I've seen videos and stuff online. It does look pretty game-breaking for some people. But
what platform is it on, sorry?
PC, PS4, and Xbox One.
Nice.
Which is quite good. They were supposed to come out on macOS as well, but they canned that for the consoles, which is probably a smart move, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So the premise of the game, set in 1403 Bohemia.
It's nice and specific.
Yeah. It's a historically accurate role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much slower pace than the kind of games that you're used to playing, if that's the kind of game that you play. And you play as Henry. He's a blacksmith's son. He's nothing special, because in a lot of games, the main character is someone of importance, someone that other people want to help, and he's got these superhuman powers where he can take on 20 people at once and, not break a sweat. Henry's not like that. Henry is the complete opposite. He's clumsy, he's useless, he can't fight, he can't read. You have to teach him to read, and that takes hours. And
this doesn't sound a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm not selling it very well.
I'm having flashbacks of like armor crafting and Skyrim.
No, it's... all right, let me skip past all that, and I'll tell you
something. Sounds like he's Gendry, not Jon Snow, if we're getting into Game of Thrones.
But, he works at it, and it's up to you to choose, how you want to develop his skill set, because the thing is, he comes with such a wide range of skills that you can build on and stuff like that. You can really specify whether you want to be like a blacksmith, or you can be like a tailor, or you can go out and be a farmer, or you can really work on your combat and go and work, be in the army.
Mm.
Another really handy thing in the game is that you can upgrade your charisma. So when you're talking to people and that you need to get quests from, you can kind of trick them, or you can avoid combat just by choosing the right words, which is always good because combat in the game is very realistic, should I say. And it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of more 1v1 combat rather than you fighting a group of people at once.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a really interesting kind of dial design, so that you choose the direction of your swipe with one of your analog sticks, and then you can kind of pretend to attack from one angle, change to go to another angle. You have to block and parry and dodge, and it's all very, very interesting.
Yeah, that does sound like something that would interest a lot of people. It's just something a bit different.
This is what I mean, they're kind of offering something different, and all the events, all the people, it's all based on real stuff that happened in 1403. It's all real stuff. The kings that are mentioned in there, they're all real.
Mm-hmm.
As you come across things in game, like, if the first time you meet an executioner, you'll unlock a codex that will tell you all about executioners in kind of the 1400s. So it's educating you as well as,
fun
playing
and
a game.
Educational.
And which country are we talking about?
It's not a modern country.
What was currently Germany?
Yeah.
I heard you lost your sword for a little while.
I did. I still haven't got it back. It's so sad. It's my father's sword, the last sword he ever made. And I got jumped by a gang. And they were like, okay, we'll fight you for your sword. I was like, yeah, I can do this. I've been training. I've been in the combat arena. Got the sword out, he slapped me once and I was down, and I was like, okay, that was that then. And he took my sword, and I was downgraded to a bludgeon for so long, just a stick of wood, just running around beating people with a stick of wood. So it's really fun. It's really frustrating. It's a slow paced game.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a beauty in that, I think.
There's a level of satisfaction, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're doing everything yourself. So, like, when you need to sharpen your swords, you have to go to a grindstone. You have to choose the angle. You have to press down on the grindstone, see the sparks, do all that. And then when you want to make potions, for example, you go to the alchemy bench. You have to read in the book, find the ingredients, grab them from the shelves, prepare it in the steps that it tells you to, or it'll fail. And
so
you
there's
won't
no
get
shortcuts.
Anything. No, there's no shortcuts.
Sounds like you need a lot of dedication then for this game. You've got to really want to achieve something.
How many hours are you in?
About 25, I think. I'm still really basic.
So, 25 hours in, is there sort of a clear path to like an end game here?
I'm not really too sure, because I've not really been focusing too heavily on the campaign because there's a lot of kind of side quest things to do, things to find. So I'm kind of just doing all that as well at the same time. But there is a very well-defined storyline in it. I'm kind of getting into it a bit more now where I'm getting into more kind of battles with people. I'm kind of working my way up the ranks a little bit.
Yeah.
But I have no idea what the end game's like yet. I'm going to save that. It's going to be a treat.
That's interesting.
And it's out now, is it?
It's out now, yeah. And I think, you know, in terms of value for money, you can't really go wrong because it's 40 quid. And, you know, a lot of 40 quid games these days will give you like 8 to 10 hours of gameplay. This one will keep, you know, there is enough here for at least 100 hours of gameplay.
As Dom knows, that is just not a selling point for
me. Yeah, that's like the complete opposite for me. I want a nice short game.
Just give me 10 good hours and I'm done.
Yeah, nice single player campaign.
Yeah.
Right, we're done with that.
I can like tick off my list mentally and be like, cool, played that, move on.
This is why I'm like more excited about Last of Us this year than Red Dead, because I know Red Dead is going to take 100 hours of my life and Last of Us is going to be about 15.
Yeah.
And I essentially want games to be about the same length as a Netflix season.
A box set,
Oh no, but then I don't know. I just feel like the value for money in open world games is so much better because then 100%. you can knock out the campaigns fairly quickly if you want to just focus on campaign. But then you've always got the extra bits and bobs to do as well, and that's the kind of thing that I like. Like, you know, I completed Assassin's Creed Origins ages ago. If that was just a single player campaign, I wouldn't go back to that and play that again. But now, every now and again, I'll jump on it. Mm. I'll do some side quests. I'll go and explore some tombs. Yep. You know, do that kind of thing. So I'm like, yeah.
Oh, totally. I mean, I get it. I get it sometimes. It's just rare for me to sort of let myself get stuck into a game like that. Zelda was the last one for me. And yeah, I sunk a load of time into that. And then when the new DLC came out, so played that. And that dragged me back into the rest of the open world. And I ended up playing the DLC for a few hours, but then getting another 15 hours of just open world stuff through. So I get it. But it's that sort of daunting thing of looking at a 100-hour game and just thinking, nope, can't even start that.
Especially when you're going to review it and you're like, oh, I've got 2 days to do this. How am I going to do it?
That's pulling the curtain back, isn't it?
So I've got to ask, like, historical accuracy, because you've mentioned potions, and my sense of potions is that they sit low on the historical accuracy register.
That's a kind of only slightly questionable part about the game, is the inclusion of potions and stuff like that. I mean, you know, there's alchemy, you know, alchemy is always a thing.
I believe people in 1403 Bohemia drank a lot of potions.
Yeah.
I don't believe they did a lot of good for
them. Yeah,
so
no,
what
that's...
happens if you get hurt or you die?
You have to reload from a save game previously. That's the kind of one of the annoying things about the game, is that to save the game, you have to have Save Your Schnapps, which is a drink that you have to make at the alchemy bench, which can't do.
They famously did in 1403 Bohemia, just save the game.
You know,
by drinking
exactly. It's what it's famous for.
Yeah.
But the issue is, you have to make them really hard to get a hold of. So essentially, you are the game's... You know, the game is in control of how long you play for, because it only saves when it wants to save.
I hate that.
Yeah.
If you drink a load of schnapps, though, in real life, you kind of are doing a save game, aren't you?
Because
you've got like a 10-hour gap there where you don't really know what happened, and then you go back to where you were.
If you do keep drinking it, though, you do become an alcoholic and you become addicted, and you have to carry on drinking it from there. So that's always fun.
That's a nice touch. Cool. All right. Verdicts: Kingdom Come or Kingdom Done?
Kingdom Come.
Kingdom Done.
Yeah, Kingdom Done. I just can't imagine getting into it.
Just haven't got the time.
Oh, you lot are terrible.
Another short break. We're going to come back and talk to Dom. Dom, Black Panther, out this week.
Yep.
Ryan Coogler's Marvel movie. I read it described today as Marvel's first masterpiece.
Ooh. Okay.
You've seen it.
Yep.
Without any spoilers, please. What do you think?
It is phenomenal. It is really, really fantastic. It's certainly one of the strongest pieces of directorial and creative vision Marvel has had in a long time. I think, especially coming hot on the heels of Thor Ragnarok, which was another great example of them really letting a director express themselves, which is something Marvel has not had a reputation for historically. They're a very producer-driven studio. Kevin Feige at the top basically declares, this is the framework for a Marvel movie, this is what we do. Directors get some room to play, but it's very much, you know, they have to fit within the mold. I think Marvel's loosening that up a lot now. Thor Ragnarok was this crazy, weird, 70s-inspired sci-fi disco goth mess, which was incredible.
Yeah,
which just kind of worked.
Yeah, and we're seeing it, like, there will be, like, Captain Marvel next year is set in the 90s. Which promises another sort of chance to break away and do something a bit different.
That's Brie Larson.
Yeah. Black Panther is picking up on T'Challa, aka Black Panther, who first appeared in Captain America's Civil War a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this sort of picks up very shortly after the end of Civil War. And in that film, his father, the king of Wakanda, dies. And so now it's sort of, this begins with him claiming his throne and, you know, becoming the king himself. So Wakanda is a sort of old fictional African nation in the Marvel Universe. The idea being that it is rich in one of those silly magic metals called vibranium, which can is the stuff that's in Captain America's shield and makes it all bouncy and special.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's sort of a catch-all for, like, it does cool stuff.
Nice.
Like, whatever generic tech cool sci-fi thing we want, yeah, vibranium did it.
Yeah.
So it is hand-wavium, you know. But so the idea is, like, this African nation Wakanda has been secretly very advanced, very rich. But they've hidden that wealth from the rest of the world to protect it. And it's just sort of all laid out in a prologue, an animated prologue, which is... it holds no punches in terms of the setup. So it shows Wakanda choosing to keep hold of its wealth and stay secret, as it shows white men coming and dragging people away in chains.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And it's very open about, criticizing sort of colonialism, criticizing slavery and that sort of stuff. It's not going to sort of pretend that didn't happen or dance around it. One white character is jokingly called the colonialist a couple times, things like that. So it's very hard hitting in that sense, especially for a big blockbustery Marvel
Absolutely,
movie.
Yeah.
It's also bold in that it doesn't take easy lines, again, without spoiling anything. A lot of the thematic stuff in the film is about, I guess, the sense that Wakanda is just as bad as some of the Western nations it wants to criticize.
Yeah.
So that idea of it being isolationist, there's actually stuff where they talk about, like, should we bring in refugees from the rest of Africa?
Mm-hmm.
And a character says, no, when refugees come, they bring their own problems with them.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Then there's talk of, oh, well, let's not bring refugees, let's send our troops out and fix all these countries for them. Which, anyone in the UK or US really knows how well that works out. So, like, it's really, like, open to taking criticism of Wakanda. It's not sort of presenting it as just this beautiful Afrofuturist wonderland utopia. It's kind of saying, look, yeah, maybe they've made mistakes, and it acknowledges, like, how easy it would be to slip into the kind of behaviour it's criticising historic US and UK and the West for, but also trying to find another path for a prosperous nation to engage with less prosperous nations around it.
Yeah, so unlike most Marvel movies, it's very overt in its politics, but also it sounds more importantly that there are moral grey areas where normally Marvel is good versus evil.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think recent Marvel things like Civil War is a good one where there is a bit of grey in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly the original ones are very good versus evil, and you still get some, like Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
The other year was very, you know, very hard line, goody, baddie, not much in between. And quite a few of them can be like that. But yeah, this is definitely grey area. I totally see that a lot of people will probably come to the end of this thinking that the bad guy was right.
Fair.
You know, a lot of people will share the bad guy's politics.
Yeah. So you said that it opens with the protagonist sort of claiming his throne.
Mm-hmm.
We know from history that doesn't always go particularly well.
Yeah.
Is that the key conflict? Is it a conflict over the throne?
Yeah. So the sort of fight for the throne is the core of it. So T'Challa, played by Chadwick Boseman, is Black Panther, and then Michael B. Jordan, who starred in Creed for Ryan Coogler, the director's last film. He's the bad guy. Killmonger is his name, which is one of those like 70s Marvel bad guy names they're kind of stuck with
it.
And they have to
they
sort of fudge it by having it not actually be his real name. It's sort of like he's a military veteran and that's the name he picked up because he racked up so many kills.
Brilliant.
So you can kind of tell he's not going to be the good guy with a name like that. So it's sort of him coming along and trying to challenge T'Challa for the throne. So there's a lot of that chance to do sort of political posturing and that kind of stuff, but it's not too interesting that this isn't sort of Game of Thrones intrigue and plotting.
How is Michael B. Jordan at playing a villain? Because I don't think he's ever really played a villain. He normally plays sort of the lovable kind of character. I mean, he's always quite an urban character, so there's always edges to him, but he's always generally comes out on top.
Yeah.
I don't want to say if he comes out on top, but I want to know how he plays villain, because he's... To me, going back to Friday Night Lights, he's just someone that I see as such a sort of lovable character.
He does a fantastic job. As you said, he's often played roles with a kind of urban edge, and that's what they play up here. So he's meant to be a character who's actually not from Wakanda or not been raised in Wakanda, mm-hmm. but grew up in Oakland in California.
Yeah.
And so it's, again, one of the interesting bits, the politics of the film. It talks about sort of the poverty of the rest of Africa, but also talks about the poverty of black people in the US, mm-hmm. and is very open about that. And so there's this sort of idea of just his, I think anger is really the underlying thing, just constant anger at oppression and injustice. One of his, I think maybe his first scene is in the Museum of Great Britain, mm-hmm. which I have personally not had the pleasure of visiting.
Heard of it.
And it's sort of, you know, very much him sort of looking at being shown around some like old African artifacts. And, you know, again, he's just straight away very sort of angry and open about, like, you know, how did your ancestors get hold of this?
Yeah.
And that's sort of the edge that's there for him the whole time, is a sense of, like, my people have been mistreated for generations, and he's going to do whatever he can to, in his mind, set that right.
Mm. So I mentioned that it's been called sort of Marvel's first masterpiece. Mm. We can argue if it is the first masterpiece, but... I wanted to sort of dig into maybe why it's had that reaction from people. I've heard some things about sort of the design.
Yep.
It's got its own sort of, it's a bit more auteur driven in that it's got very much its own look and feel. That's the thing about Marvel generally.
Yep.
And this is what people criticize DC movies for a lot, is that they feel the same. They're all very much of a DC look and feel. It sounds like with Black Panther, they've given Coogler a bit more rope here to kind of stamp his vision on it. The only thing I know about the film without seeing it is that I've listened to the soundtrack, and the soundtrack is phenomenal.
The soundtrack is.
They've just let Kendrick Lamar go absolutely for it and bring all his mates in and just basically build a brilliant mixtape. So, I mean, that immediately was like, I was like, okay, this is probably going to be pretty good.
And some of that soundtrack is woven into the film itself. There's also a more traditional score, but it's not sort of just... simple orchestral stuff. It weaves in a lot of more sort of African and Caribbean sounds into it. So there's a lot of drum stuff and that kind of thing.
Cool.
And it does a great job of weaving between that kind of score and the soundtrack. And even though it's Smartless Touches is a bit set in Korea, and a Psy song comes on as they land in Korea, the Gangnam Style guy. Sort of not played for comedy, but played for like, right, here's some Korean hip-hop. And it's like, you know, like, so it's sort of, whenever it goes for some modern music, it's hip-hop all the way.
They couldn't have done K-pop. It would have sounded weird.
There's definitely a sense that Ryan Coogler is getting to do what he wants to do here. The design is phenomenal. Sort of Afrofuturist style just looks absolutely incredible. And it's there... all the way through the film. The costumes, the design of Wakanda, the city itself, all of their tech. And what's fascinating is the sense that they've gone and... you can always imagine that thought process has been reimagining the whole path of tech development. Because this isn't meant to be a country that's sort of taking its cues from the West in its tech development. This is meant to be a country that's been building its tech before we were ever doing it. You know? So it's sort of looking at it like, right, okay, when they fly their ships, they don't sit in like a cockpit pilot chair like we do. Sort of, they sit in a sort of meditative cross-legged pose, and that's how they fly their ships. And instead of like phone communication device, they have like beaded bracelets, and each bead is a discrete bit of the communication system and has a different like functionality. Stuff like that feels like they've thought of it right from the ground up, how to do it and how it might have developed.
Nice. So does this... kind of lay out the vision for future Marvel movies? It seems that back in the day, the studio wanted control because they had a sort of a ready-made blueprint on their hands. But now with the success of Logan and the success of Deadpool and now the huge critical reception of this and box office, it absolutely smashed it in its first week of the box office. Are they going to let more directors kind of go with their gut on these things?
I think they will. I think, to be honest, actually probably we can trace all this really back to James Gunn's first Guardians of the Galaxy film, which was really the first time they let an author...
Well, I think you could probably trace it all the way back to the Avengers, but then that kind of became the blueprint.
Exactly.
So it started that way, but then it was so successful that they used that as the blueprint, and now they're going back to letting more voices at it.
I think, yeah, you've got to give Marvel credit. They've definitely recognised that things got a bit samey and that that became a regular criticism of sort of that kind of like lots of 3 and 4 stars. Like, yeah, this is good, but it's the same as the last one. It's just more good.
It's popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, Thor Ragnarok and this are both signs of them being more open. I think we'll have to get through the 2 Avengers films before we see it open up properly in that sense, which I think they'll probably be very good. But the 2 Avengers films are being directed by, the name's gone out of my head, but the guys who did Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Yeah.
The Russo brothers, that's it.
Yes.
So they are very, very capable directors, and those are 2 of the better Marvel films we've had, but equally they do fit very safely in the Marvel mold.
Of course.
So I think Avengers Infinity War and whatever the next Avengers are will both be that kind of safe, solid Marvel that's made billions and billions and billions of dollars. But we've got Captain Marvel next year that could be a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they're done with the second Avengers, they're sort of open to just do a lot more. That's when they kind of, everything's been built up to the end of the Avengers. And then from there, they can see where they want to go and which characters they want to continue with and which new ones they want to introduce.
This has kind of been ruined by Rian Johnson, but you could definitely parallel it with the way that Disney are treating Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like those big 3 sort of, you know, canon movies have to look and feel like a Star Wars movie, especially The Force Awakens just felt like a rehash. Then Rian Johnson, kind of broke the mold a little bit and was able to stamp it, but it still very much felt like a Star Wars movie. But then with things like Rogue One and upcoming with Solo, it appears that they are allowing people to do a little bit more with their universe off to the side.
Yeah.
But so they make all the money with the big ones and then kind of can take some risks with the others.
The challenge Lucasfilm has to learn with that is how to actually let their directors go and do that, because both...
Because they haven't.
Gareth Edwards in Rogue One, they intervened for the final cut, and then obviously Solo, they fired the directors halfway through and replaced them with Ron Howard. So there's a real sense over at Lucasfilm that Kathleen Kennedy has a sort of dictatorial view of how that Star Wars universe is run. And I do think maybe they could learn some lessons from looking at what Taika Waititi's done with Thor, what Ryan Coogler's done here with Black Panther, as to how, like, Kevin Feige's learned, I think, to step back a bit.
Yeah.
And the results have been phenomenal for the past few films.
Yeah, so she stepped back for Rian Johnson, but that's because she liked what she saw.
Yeah.
So she kind of was allowed to. I did read one thing about Black Panther that we were talking about how samey a lot of the Marvel movies are. And the problem I've always had with superhero movies over the last sort of 5 years, and I stopped watching them, is that they always had the same stakes. It was always someone comes along, they're going to blow up a city, good guys have to stop that from happening. Which it really sort of, it was the new Superman movies that that really kind of did that for me. It, from what I've heard, the stakes are very different in Black Panther, and that's a good thing.
They managed to feel both very personal and in a sense global, but it's a very different sort of global threat. I can't really say what it is, but the global threat is not the world's going to explode. It's not someone's about to become dictator of the world. It's not someone's going to blow up a whole city. There's none of that. There's not that Marvel trope that they did for about 5 films in a row where a load of small spaceships were attacking a single city from above, which, like, you could pick out like 5 different Marvel films where that was the final sequence. Yeah, so it is different. It does fall into
and
one
Big
of
Hero
my
6 as well.
Yeah, it does fall into one of my other least favorite superhero tropes, I will admit, which is good guy fights evil version of himself.
Yeah.
So, you know, the final fight is Black Panther versus bad guy in another Black Panther suit.
Sure.
And you know, it's a decent enough fight scene. It's done, but it's that kind of like superheroes are always more interesting when they fight someone with a different power set. In terms of the action. And that, I would say, is, if Black Panther has a weak spot, it's the action. It's good, it's fine, but it's not going to be the bit anyone sort of writes home about. You're not going to desperately want to rewatch single action sequences.
Yeah.
There's a great car chase in Korea. The rest of the action is kind of there. It's fine. It's not Marvel's best.
Yeah.
So I think if you're just there for the fight scenes and the effects and the big sort of spectacle side of it, Black Panther might disappoint slightly. And certainly there's none of the sort of vision in that that, say, Doctor Strange, which, while not definitely nowhere near as good a film, Doctor Strange had phenomenal visual effects and phenomenal visual sense to the way it handled the big action sequences. Black Panther isn't. You can tell that's not where Ryan Coogler's really interested.
Yeah. Cool. Right, so I can't really go around the room because I think Dom's the only one who's seen it.
I'm certainly interested.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I will be seeing it hopefully next week. But Dom, Black Panther or domesticated house cat?
Definitely Black Panther.
Yeah, I think that is safe to say. Well, that's all from this week. Thank you very much for joining us. If you enjoyed what you heard, please remember to subscribe and tell your friends. But from us here, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.